Support for Kansas City Today comes from Grandma's Office Catering, delivering made-from-scratch hot meals and individual boxed lunches for fast distribution to offices, warehouses, and factories, even on nights and weekends. Details are at grandmascatering.com.
This is Kansas City Today. I'm Nomi Nujiadeen. Today is Thursday, April 11th. Coming up, a large property company went on a spending spree, buying hundreds of homes in Kansas City and St. Louis. That led to maintenance issues that went unresolved for years.
It's rotting underneath here so badly that this house is completely infested by cockroaches.
Now, Vinebrook Homes is selling many of its properties to pay off debts, and the tenants are still angry. Plus, a Kansas woman has been unable to adopt her grandchild from the state's foster care system. A judge ruled the grandmother didn't have a bond with the child, even though the grandmother was with the child at birth. We'll hear what happened next. But first, some headlines. Jackson County's assessment collections and recorder of deeds offices remain closed after a ransomware attack last week. The closure has caused further delays on top of already long lines due to understaffing. Stacy Maciejewski works for a construction company that needs to register two business trucks with the assessment office. She says right now, employees have to drive their personal vehicles to work sites.
It's already a funneled system to begin with, and it's already a long wait period. It's only going to be worse for, you know, until they get all this corrected.
Jackson County says it's made progress on restoring operations, but offices will remain closed until the system is updated. The Missouri Senate approved a bill early yesterday morning that would stop state funding, including Medicaid reimbursements, from going to abortion providers and affiliates like Planned Parenthood. Democrats held the floor for more than 11 hours to filibuster the bill, but they eventually stood down. Senator Tracy McCreary, a Democrat from St. Louis County, says the bill punishes Missourians who are on Medicaid and want to use Planned Parenthood as their reproductive health care provider. Planned Parenthood does not provide abortions in Missouri.
In some communities, the Planned Parenthood Health Center is really the only provider in what feels like a reproductive health care desert.
The Missouri House of Representatives will now consider the bill. Cleats from a vandalized statue of Jackie Robinson, stolen from a Wichita park, will have a new home today in Kansas City. KCUR's Lawrence Brooks IV has more.
Police say thieves toppled the statue in January, just days before Robinson's 105th birthday. The vandals destroyed most of the statue, leaving just the cleats. In a press release Tuesday, the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum said it will add the cleats to an existing display about the legend who broke Major League Baseball's color barrier. Museum President Bob Kendrick will formally accept the remnants Thursday as a way to teach future generations about tolerance. Wichita police arrested and charged a 45-year-old man in the theft. Police do not believe it was racially motivated.
We'll be back after this.
You listen to Kansas City Today every day because we're your local, reliable news source. You take us seriously. But now it's time to have some fun. Join us at our annual benefit, Radioactive, on June 14th. NPR's All Things Considered host Ari Shapiro is the featured guest at this party, and it's gonna be bumpin'. You gotta be there. Sponsorship packages and ticket information are available at kcur.org/radioactive.
Ohio-based property equity firm Vinebrook Homes has bought thousands of single-family homes in the Kansas City area and rented them out. Many tenants claim Vinebrook neglects its properties, which the company denies. Now Vinebrook faces another problem and is selling hundreds of properties in order to pay off a huge debt. The Midwest Newsroom's Kayvon Mansouri reports.
Good housing can be hard to come by, but that's exactly what Julia Cowell and her husband William were looking for. The piano is center stage in the living room of the couple's four-bedroom home in Hazelwood, Missouri. The Cowells have five kids, with another on the way. Their light blue house sits in a quiet cul-de-sac, a typical one-story home in this St. Louis County community that the Cowells rent from Vinebrook Homes.
The market is pretty competitive for finding a single home to rent that fits our family in it. And so eventually we found Vinebrook and this house, toured. It looked beautiful. It was perfect for our family. We moved right in.
Vinebrook Homes started buying properties in 2019, hastened by low interest rates during the pandemic house buying boom. The company now owns more than 24,000 homes in the Midwest and South in cities like Cincinnati, Memphis, Kansas City, and St. Louis. The houses are located in low to moderate income neighborhoods that are predominantly communities of color. On its website, Vinebrook Homes says it provides quality, affordable housing. Some renters tell a different story, and Cal says problems for her family became apparent shortly after they moved in. She says maintenance orders went unfilled, the roof started to leak, plumbing issues were rampant, and
the floor is rotting underneath here so badly that this house is completely infested by cockroaches.
And Cal says eviction notices arrived if rent was even a day late. A Midwest Newsroom investigation, lawsuits, and Better Business Bureau complaints revealed a litany of other problems renters cited, including non-existing customer service, steadily increasing rents, and deteriorating properties. And in Cincinnati, where Vinebrook owns more than 3,000 homes, the city sued the company twice for breaking the city's tenant laws. Laura Brunner is CEO of the Port of Greater Cincinnati Development Authority.
So you got a great big guy pushing down on the small guy that is willing, for as long as they can, to pay too much for the rent because they don't have choices.
However, a Vinebrook spokesperson says the company is actually breathing new life into neighborhoods, and without the company's investment, the homes it buys would continue to deteriorate. Besides complaints from renters and lawsuits, Vinebrook is also coping with a huge $1.2 billion debt caused by a changing housing landscape and floating interest rates. In a December Securities and Exchange Commission filing, the company said it would have to sell off about 1,700 homes to satisfy that debt. It's already sold more than 400 of them. Noel Christopher, a single-family home rental expert and member of the industry group the Forbes Real Estate Council, says that's a typical strategy companies like Vinebrook use when they're in trouble.
This is what these funds plan for. This is part of their thesis, was when you get into hard times, it's easy to cull the portfolio and sell homes and get that full value.
That plan may help Vinebrook, but Laura Brunner says as institutional buyers rapidly buy and sell homes, they're fundamentally changing the face of the country's most vulnerable neighborhoods and shutting out individuals who want to buy homes.
When you're targeting Black and brown neighborhoods, and we already have this incredible wealth gap in our country, the very people that need the opportunity to start to build wealth are being blocked out.
However, Vinebrook says it's prioritizing selling homes to customers who already live in them, and a portion of the homes sold were bought by tenants. It's an argument that doesn't persuade U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio. Brown introduced the Stop Predatory Investing Act in response to Vinebrook's business dealings in Cincinnati. The proposed law would bar companies that buy more than 50 single-family rental homes from receiving federal tax breaks.
They take advantage of federal law, which essentially subsidizes these predatory investors and do great damage to their communities and to these families.
Several other bills have been proposed in Congress in the wake of the single-family rental boom, including one proposal to investigate possible price gouging and manipulation by providers in the business. For the Midwest Newsroom, I'm Kayvon Mansouri.
That story comes from St. Louis Public Radio and the Midwest Newsroom, a collaboration among NPR and public radio stations in Missouri, Kansas, Iowa, and Nebraska. A Kansas grandmother won't be able to adopt her grandchild because a judge ruled she didn't have a bond with the kid. Blaise Mesa of The Beacon and Daniel Cottle of the Kansas News Service report the grandmother says she did everything she was told to.
Blaise, what do we know about this case?
Yeah, so this case centers around two families trying to adopt about a 7 or 8 month old child in foster care. You have the child's grandmother, Mindy Mathis, and the child's aunt, who we're not naming because they didn't want their name mentioned in the story. The aunt lived with the child for most of the time. That was kind of the primary caregiver, and she's the one who was eventually chosen as the adoptive family. But Mindy Mathis, the grandmother, says she spent a good portion of this case trying to call caseworkers to set up more visits, but just struggled to do so.
There are hundreds and hundreds of foster care cases every year. What makes this one different?
This case is a combination of a lot of issues in foster care. You know, families complain about judicial decisions, their communication with caseworkers, and oversight of individual foster care agencies and companies. St. Francis was the contractor on this case. In the beginning, they called Mindy Mathis, that's the grandmother, to ask her if she wanted to take in the child. According to court records, the caseworker told Mathis that if she took in the child, it would be harder for that child to return to her biological mother. Because Mathis lived so far away from the mom, visits would be hard, they'd see each other less, that type of stuff. So Mathis, she says, following caseworker's advice, let the child go to a stranger, to a foster home, only to be told later that she really wasn't in line to adopt the child because somebody else had a much closer, stronger bond with the child. That's something Mathis disagrees with, though.
I cut her umbilical cord. I helped name her. Can't tell me that I don't have a bond with my own flesh and blood granddaughter.
So Mathis was told she could keep the family together if she let her granddaughter go to a foster home, but then she lost the chance to adopt her because of that?
That is certainly what Mathis is arguing. She's very frustrated because she says she listened to what caseworkers told her. She did what the judge told her to do throughout the case. She says she even called caseworkers for months and months to set up more visits so she could spend more time with the child, but her calls went unanswered, and by the time someone finally picked up, the child was living with the aunt, who would eventually go on to adopt her.
So were you able to talk with the judge on this case?
Yes, I was able to briefly talk with the judge. I also talked with the agency St. Francis, but neither could comment on the case, of course. We do have court transcripts, though.
And so do those court transcripts help us understand the judge's decision-making?
Yes. So the court transcripts say the judge was pretty concerned about the child's bond with an adult. We're talking about a 7-8-month-old child when this case started. The case lasted for a few years. Now, those are obviously very crucial times for all types of development, but especially emotional development, building a bond, feeling safe with a family. And the judge worried that taking the child away from someone they had lived with for years to put him in a new home would just be way too detrimental.
What do we know about the family who will adopt the child?
Yeah, so it is the child's aunt. That's a blood relative. The aunt and the child did not really have much of a relationship before foster care, but court records say the girl really bonded to both Mathis and the now adoptive mother. So this case really isn't a matter of who's a good mother, who's a bad mother. Caseworkers say they're both great parents, but it's a matter of whether Mathis feels she got a fair shake or not.
The case is final, so Mathis has no chance to appeal. Does that mean she doesn't get to see her granddaughter?
The aunt says she will let Mathis still visit, still is the child's grandmother, but Mathis worries the court battle has messed up their relationship. Mathis says if she could do it all over again, she wouldn't have called DCF in the first place.
If we knew then what we know now, we never would have called anybody for help. We would have just drove down and got our grandbaby.
That was Blaise Mesa of The Beacon and Daniel Cottle of the Kansas News Service. KCUR's Kansas News Service reports on health, the many factors that influence it, and their connection to public policy. This is Kansas City Today. I'm Nomi Nujiadi. This podcast is produced by David McKeel and KCUR Studios. It's edited by Madeline Fox and Gabe Rosenberg. To read Kayvon's reporting on Vinebrook Homes and Daniel and Blaze's reporting on the foster care system in Kansas, visit kcur.org, where you can find more Kansas and Missouri news from Kansas City's NPR station. If you like our show, please leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps us reach new listeners. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you tomorrow.